Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, welcome to the Shame Free Zone. This is Veronica Monet, your host, and we're going to be talking about Proposition 35 tonight, as well as just the broader topic of human trafficking. And I know we've been kind of hitting this topic over and over again here. I hope you're not getting tired of it. You shouldn't be getting tired of it because it's big news everywhere you turn. I was just listening to some program about yoga, of all things. You know, I have great admiration of this program Off the Mat and Into the World. I think it's fabulous, and I myself do a lot of yoga, and I love it. But, you know, they're doing fundraisers for sex trafficking in India, and I just cringe. I cringe because I realize people who are raking the money and trying to do good. They're trying to save victims and help people who are in need, but they know so little about the actual issue. And how they are probably, I don't know for sure about this particular program, but probably actually hurting people instead of helping them. And that's a really, really sad state of affairs, but it has so much to do with shame, sexual shame in our culture, and how these things, we kind of get hysterical about things. We hear about white slavery was the term that people were hysterical about in the 50s, and now they're hysterical about trafficking. And for anybody who wants to control legislation and society, and specifically people's sexual behavior, these become great buzzwords to get voters and funders to climb aboard and help them achieve their agenda. So what we have right now are a lot of conservative people, religious right in particular, who have an agenda to make prostitution and pornography illegal, and they use the human trafficking buzzword in order to try to get money for their cause, or their causes, I should say. And unfortunately, there's also quite a few second wave feminists who have a similar agenda. And it just goes to show you, I remember one and only time I ever got protested at one of my keynotes, it was the feminists and the Republicans who showed up together. Strange bedfellows, right? Politics makes strange bedfellows. Well, I think you should always be aware of who's standing next to you when you are trying to pass a piece of legislation. Might give you some idea whether or not your efforts are on spot or perhaps a little bit misdirected. Anyway, big news for tonight, of course, is that we have got a huge, huge storm hitting the east coast of the United States, and my guest happens to be in New York City, and I just saw some devastating pictures. It looked like there was a tunnel flooded, the streets were flooded, but I did get an email about 45 minutes ago from my guest, and she said her lights were just flickering. So we're going to hope that we can bring her on the air here. And she's actually a leading expert on the rights of low-income and immigrant women in the areas of sexual health and rights and gender-based violence, economic security, and criminal justice. And her name is Juhu Thakral. And we're going to see in a few minutes if we can get her to join our program. And I know that shortly after that, we're actually expecting a call in from Maxine Dugan. And Maxine Dugan is also the voice of opposition, the lone voice of opposition here in the state of California against Proposition 35 on the license case act. And is that, is Juhu, are you there?
Yes, hello. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you just fine. And I hope I didn't, butcher your name. Did I say it right?
Not at all. It's Juhu Tikral, and thanks for having me.
I'm glad to have you on the show. Honored, as a matter of fact. I'm actually familiar with your work, seen your name in print many, many times, and I don't think we've ever had the opportunity to actually meet. So the listeners are going to want to know, before we dive into our topic tonight, what's the weather like and how are you? Are you safe? Are you dry?
We're okay here. I'm in Brooklyn, and it's a little spotty, but, we're doing okay here, but I think Lower Manhattan and other parts of Brooklyn and Queens are not faring so well tonight. So
wow.
I think we've got a bit of a cleanup tomorrow.
Oh, yes. I think the president's already been on the television tonight, and I don't know if he actually declared everything a disaster, but he said it was going to take a while to clean it up. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're very, very happy that you're safe, you're sound, and that you still have electricity. So I don't know how familiar you are with Proposition 35 here in California. Have you been following that much?
Yes. I mean, I think this is a really dangerous law. Unfortunately, what we're seeing is an effort that, you know, I think it's well-intentioned by some, but it's actually going to be harming victims of trafficking, people who actually are working in a climate of fear. And it's going to make it harder for them to come forward. It's going to make it more difficult for people who suspect that they are meeting people who are trafficked to come forward and report. The scary thing is that California already has one of the strongest anti-trafficking laws in the country. And it's a model for other states and has acted as a model over the last few years. And, you know, California has also passed other laws like the California Supply Chain Act. I think that folks in California who want to do something about trafficking need to put some pressure on Governor Brown, because he actually vetoed two bills that would have actually protected the rights of trafficked persons, the California Domestic Workers Bill of Rights and the California Trust Act. So I think what we're seeing right now is intentions that are good, but they're actually leading to bad solutions instead of the kinds of good things that we can do to take care of people who are trafficked.
What's your theory on why sex trafficking has been singled out as something, you know, that people are really interested in, whereas it seems other types of trafficked forced labor are not really getting the media attention?
Yeah, and I think it's something that you referred to as you were starting out the show, right? There's a history of, you know, for lack of a better word, I think it started as hysteria in this country around sexuality and the sexual autonomy of women, and we've seen it morph and come and go over the years. But I think more importantly, anybody who has a sense that, you know, a young person may be forced into prostitution, or that anybody might be forced into sex work against their will, it really taps into a lot of deep-seated fears for people. And rather than focusing on these emotions, what we need to do is figure out, how do we help people who actually have been forced or coerced into any type of labor, who are living under a threat or a climate of fear? And unfortunately, right now I think we're seeing a lot of emotions that are being driven by fallacious stories rather than common sense approaches to protecting workers' rights.
You know, that is, it brings up a really interesting topic too, and that is, how do you quantify the number of sex trafficking victims? I know there have been some incredible numbers thrown about, and then it seemed like somebody had hypothesized that there might be 3 to 6 million potential trafficking victims, and then somehow or another that winds up being quoted as an actual statistic. Do you have access to any solid numbers about how many trafficking victims there are worldwide or in the United States, broken down by state?
I'm personally, and I would say every organization that I have worked with or continue to work with now, I mean, we're pretty skeptical of the numbers because it is hard to quantify the numbers of trafficked persons. And it's really important to look at the kind of methodologies that folks are using when they're doing the counting, because during the Bush administration, for example, I remember calling the State Department to ask them how they were doing their counting for the State Department reports on trafficking. And they basically, you know, admitted that they didn't have a clear method. They were sort of looking at media reports, many of which would turn out to be inaccurate later. So I think it's important for people to realize that we may not know exactly how many people are being forced into labor of any kind. The thing to remember is that there are people out there who are in really vulnerable situations, and what we need are smart solutions, ways to get them the help they need and the help they want. And I think that often gets lost in this, is we don't have to get so mired in the numbers. The idea is to create environments where people who are, especially people working in low-wage sectors like the restaurant industry, the agricultural industry, domestic workers, and including sex workers, that they have the ability to come forward when they're feeling like they're victims of abuse or when they feel that they're being threatened or coerced in some way.
So I know that the plan, like for instance, the CASE Act, Proposition 35 here in California, its approach is to arrest the so-called trafficking victims, then kind of put them through an interrogation process whereby they can either prove that they've been trafficked and then kind of get a pass, if you will, and then they would go into the category of having been rescued, or if they can't prove that they've been trafficked, then they'd be prosecuted for sex crimes. Do you think that that approach is going to lead to the truth?
We've seen over and over that the more you engage people in the criminal justice system when they have been, you know, victims of violence, or whether they are maybe vulnerable and are scared, it doesn't work out very well, because this idea that you can arrest somebody who's in a vulnerable situation and that's going to make them now trust the government, it's preposterous, right? I've worked with people who've been trafficked, or people who are maybe at risk for trafficking, people who weren't trafficked at all, but law enforcement thought they might be. And, you know, the ways that they have found to be the most supportive have often been around working with friends and neighbors, working with people in their community, and, you know, going to trusted and qualified social service providers and figuring out how to handle things that way. But the other thing that you've asked about, Prop 35, is, you know, what is its impact going to be? And one of the problems with this ballot is that it is so poorly written and poorly defined that its impact is going to be difficult. It's to understand. I think that law enforcement is going to have a really tough time figuring out what they're supposed to do, and that is going to make everyone less safe, because some people will be seen as trafficked, some people will be seen as traffickers when they're not, and we're going to see the potential for ruining a lot of lives.
Yeah, I agree, and I think what we're going to find too is a lot of people who were never trafficked are going to be saying that they were, just because they got arrested. And, you know, what else are you going to say? You're the founding steering committee member of the New York Anti-Trafficking Network, and it sounds like there were some measures that you wanted our Governor Brown to sign. What do you see as the right approach to helping trafficking victims?
The right approach is one that's actually rooted in helping people leave situations safely, that is rooted in respecting their autonomy and respecting their own voice. I mean, so much of what we try to do as people who work with trafficked people is make sure that they're in a place where they're safe and they can decide what they want and they make the decisions. And, you know, it's often called, you know, survivor-centered services. The idea is that you actually respect the human rights of people who are in very vulnerable situations. And introducing law enforcement right away is often the exact opposite of creating a human rights approach, because we've seen that law enforcement can sometimes be abusive towards people that when they arrest them. Sometimes there's a lack of understanding of where folks are coming from. And there's this also, there's a fear. I mean, remember, a lot of people who have been trafficked are immigrants, and they come from countries where law enforcement is very corrupt, and they're not going to trust the government. So it's important to create services that are qualified, where people are not saying, you know, we think you're trafficked. It's more about, here, tell me about your experience, and we're going to figure out ways to make sure you get the legal protection that you need, the help with housing, the help with getting access to services, English language classes, whatever it is that you need. But it's about making sure that people who often have, they're in a place where they don't get to make their own decisions anymore, are actually making decisions about themselves and their own future.
So instead of rescuing people, we want to empower them.
Exactly.
I think one thing that perhaps voters are not aware of is that there's a substantial number of trafficking victims, quote unquote, who are rescued and then go right back to the employment situation that they were rescued from. What is your read on that? Do you think that they are suffering from identification with their perpetrators, or do you think that they weren't really authentic trafficking victims in the first place? Do you think there's some incentives by the system to kind of play that until you run out of money and resources and then go back to the former profession? Or I'm just wondering, that you probably have actually seen actual cases here, what tends to be the reason that somebody would go back to a situation that they were supposed to have been rescued from?
Well, there's a couple of different things, and you have to remember that people who have been trafficked have any range of motivations, just like the rest of us. But it could be that they weren't trafficked at all, but someone thought they were, whether it was someone who meant to be a good Samaritan or whether it was the local police. It could be that they are out in the world and they don't feel like they know how to make certain decisions in a new setting, and that's often because they're not getting the support that they need, and they're not getting a good, you know, legal team, social work team, and case provision, basically, and so they might fall through the cracks and go back into what they know. People often go back to what they know. Sometimes it's that people need to make money, and this may be the only way that they know how to make money, even if they're not getting to keep everything. So it's so much, you know, I think there's this sense in the media that there are all these people who are being trafficked, usually into sex work, and I think in the public mind, and they are sitting there waiting for someone to come along and, wave a magic wand and suddenly everything's going to be okay. But the reality is that when you need to make money, when you are isolated and alone, and when you don't necessarily know the language or the culture, or even if you do, you need a lot of support in getting to a place where you can move forward. And that support is out there, but laws like Prop 35 are going to make it much more difficult for people, because it's all going to be about arrest. It's all going to be about making sure that there is shaming of people who are perhaps peripherally around the business of sex work. So, for example, taxi drivers or, you know, people who take money or, you know, handle the phone, suddenly they're all going to be seen as traffickers, when in reality I can tell you that it's often those people who identify somebody as trafficked and help them escape.
Yeah. It's getting to the point now, thanks to, well, really, this, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe most of this started during the initial Bush administration, when he took two FBI agents off of Homeland Security and put them onto the task of prosecuting prostitution as if it was a federal crime. And then we started demanding that any countries that we were sending aid to had to take an anti-prostitution pledge. So I remember when Brazil turned down about $60 million from the U.S. because they'd already put in a beautiful program where they're combating the spread of HIV by working with their sex workers, and the last thing they wanted to do was have to take an anti-prostitution pledge, because then that meant that they couldn't even talk to the prostitutes.
Yeah, so much of this is also about, I think, getting a certain amount of political credibility, because it's easy for politicians to scapegoat sex workers in the name of women's rights or immigrant rights, but it's actually a lot harder to put into place the kinds of help and legal protections and protections around safety that people need. And what we've seen over the last decade or even longer is a lot of activists who are really focused on being anti-prostitution activists try to take over the anti-trafficking movement, because the anti-trafficking movement is about fighting fear, threats, and coercion in any area of work, and it is a serious issue around the world. But unfortunately, it's easy to think about rescuing women from sexual situations, and rather than coming up with really strong solutions and funding those solutions, you know, funding care and making sure that we're protecting people's legal rights. That's a lot harder to do.
Joho, do you think sometimes that the propensity to try to dismiss this is just about sex trafficking? We don't want to look at the person who's washing our dishes or sewing our clothes or mowing our lawns and investigate the idea that perhaps those people are indentured or trafficked or otherwise disadvantaged, because we really do have so much money in this country, and I think sometimes it's almost a case of guilt. It's kind of sublimated mm-hmm. guilt. It's like, I don't really want to look at my part in creating the trafficking mm-hmm. problem, so I'd rather rescue some sex slaves, because I know I don't have anything to do with that. Do you think that's a possibility?
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. We are all complicit every time that we, you know, look to buy some cheaply made garment, or we're looking for cheaper services, whether it's, at nail salons or domestic workers or at a restaurant, and we're not willing to pay the actual value of work. We've created a culture in which it's easy to look away from that. But that's why, so for example, California passed the Supply Chain Act, which was about making sure that companies are making it more of an effort to look at what is going on in the making of their goods. And the flip side of that is that we all need to be a lot more diligent about thinking about where the services are coming from that we pay for. I have a colleague who has talked a lot about the fact that, you know, you go to a party where somebody is there in someone's home and they're passing you an hors d'oeuvre, you know, you are complicit in the fact that paid person may not be paid, even though you're just at someone's cocktail party.
Right. Yeah, I think sometimes it's kind of hard to look at the disparity between even those of us who may not be living that luxuriously in this country are still by far much, much wealthier than, you know, 3/4 of the people on this planet. And I think it's hard to look that in the face, and so it feels good to think we've passed a punitive law or sent money to an NGO that's going to rescue those people over there who are, you know, somehow or another too uneducated or silly or don't have a clue, and we have to help them. And I think that really gives us a sense of superiority over them. And the whole idea of rescuing just seems incredibly degrading. I think to look at how we're creating this and how we're participating in it would take a lot more courage. And then certainly, you know, directing our resources towards empowering people so that they really are in charge of themselves, would be a step in the right direction. You're actually the founder and director of the Sex Worker Project at the Urban Justice Center in New York City. And I'm wondering what kind of work you do from there as regards sex worker rights.
Well, I did found the Sex Workers Project, and I'm not there anymore, but I'm still a senior advisor. I still work with them. And it's the only legal project in the country that provides legal services and social services to sex workers. So there's a lot of direct work with people who come to sex work from any type of situation, whether it's choice, circumstance, or coercion. And the Sex Workers Project also engages in a lot of policy advocacy. We were behind the first law in the country that essentially erased the convictions of people who have been arrested and convicted of certain crimes, but they're also trafficked. And so now there are other states in the U.S. that have passed and are looking to pass a similar law. So the idea, again, is that there's a lot that we can do. There are a lot of laws that we can pass that would help trafficked people. Prop 35, which is just enhancing penalties and putting people on sex offender registries that is confusing the law and confusing definitions, is not one of the solutions. It's actually undermining a really good law in California.
And are you referring to the law that was passed in 2005?
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's going to undermine a lot of things. Not to mention, you know, the bid for civil rights for sex workers. How do you feel about that? Do you think the sex workers have civil rights in the United States?
Sex workers have the same rights that everyone else does. And, you know, we've seen a lot of organizations and even law enforcement folks and, you know, the ACLU and a number of editorial boards in Sacramento, the LA Times, come out against Prop 35 because they are recognizing that this is not a law that's about promoting human rights or civil rights.
No, it doesn't appear to be. It doesn't even appear to be victim-centered. Well, what would you tell the voters who are probably really confused at this point? I mean, when they read the legislation, you know, they just read the summary of it, and it's like they're going to put the terrible traffickers and pimps away, and you know, I think they get frustrated because they don't feel that the crimes that are out there are being handled properly. I think a lot of bad people are getting away with murder, sometimes literally. Do you think that longer sentences and larger fines are the answer to solving crime?
Putting more people into the criminal justice system and arresting people and then expecting that to be a way of helping them is not something that works, and we've seen that over and over again. So I think that what people need to know if they're thinking about Prop 35 is vote no, and it's important to learn about what trafficking actually is, how trafficking takes place. It takes place around us in any number of areas of work, and it's important to remember that it's about threats and coercion and people working in fear.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. Well, look, I know we're keeping you up late. I don't want to impose on you too much, especially when you've got a hurricane bearing down on you. Is there anything else that you wanted to share to our listeners before we let you call it a day?
No, just vote no on Prop 35 and remember to pressure Governor Brown to actually sign laws that are going to help trafficked people. There's a lot that you can do, and people don't have to feel like this is their only option, because it's not. There are a lot of laws that respect the human rights of trafficked people, of all workers, of sex workers.
Okay. And what if people want to support your work? Or is there a website you'd like them to visit? Or
yeah, they can follow me on Twitter at @JuhuTukral, or they can also visit the Sex Workers Project, because they are continuing to do great work there, or the New York Anti-Trafficking Network.
All right. Thanks so much for taking time out of your what is now turning into the morning for you. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. And once again, that was Juhu Sukral. She was actually recognized as one of the 21 leaders for the 21st century in 2012, which is very cool. So there you have it. There's another expert weighing in on the fact that we don't want to vote in the CASE Act or Proposition 35 here in California. And actually, it's very interesting. There's been a lot of people who have been well, I think I'm still on the air there.
You're not only out on the air, but your guest has just dropped off. Should I try it now?
No. We were letting her go. But there is somebody. It's like 12:30 in the morning out there. But there is somebody else I'd like you to contact.
Okay.
Her name is Maxine Dugan. Let me get. She's been trying to call me in. Maxine Dugan. She's the voice of opposition to Proposition 35. Let's try her on her 415-265-3302.
You know, you enchanted me with your voice, David.
Thank you, Doug.
I really didn't mean you to say it again.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's 415-265-3302.
With me?
I am. Am I off the air or on the air?
We're both on the air, and we sound like drones, but I don't think that's a good
idea. That's terrible. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. You try to pull in Maxine, and I'm going to keep talking, because that's what I get paid to do. I can't tell. I can't tell. I'm totally at your mercy, Doug. It's just whatever you decide to do. So, for those of you who are still tuned into this comedy hour, I'm here. There's Maxine. Maxine, you just missed Juhu Sukral from
I heard her. I was on hold on the other line. So,
Well, I'm sorry I didn't realize you were on hold, and I saw you camping onto my personal phone, but there's no way I can pull you into the radio show from there, so I just decided to call you direct.
I'm trying to email you.
Yeah, so catch us
no,
up
No, she
on
was great. She was. It was great to hear her. It was
oh,
great
fabulous.
To hear her.
She's absolutely fabulous, and she's rock solid on this topic, and of course she's a preeminent expert on trafficking, so... Can't get much better than that. So tell us, you've been traveling all over this state. You just got back from Los Angeles. You want to give us kind of a little update about what's going on throughout the state and what you've been up to?
Sure.
To. Okay, go
for
it.
Yeah, so it was interesting. Sorry, we're calling on the line that's published, so there's like a bazillion people calling. So I went to... do the one of the Jewish community centers, and it was just, it's so interesting. What I'm starting to realize is that there's a bunch of people against Prop 35. They're just not being very public about it.
that they've looked at it and they're just shaking their heads because they understand that it's got all the problems in it. And so one of the reasons I wanted to call in is because, you know, I'm on the internet looking around, and here is the San Diego Free Press who has rescinded their endorsement for Prop 35. And so I don't know if you know that or not, but also
you
heard that Sage had rescinded their endorsement too for Prop 35.
Sage, I knew had because John Vanek had announced that when I was speaking at Stanford last week. But did Sage ever come out and say why they rescinded?
Well, all I saw was that Naomi had said that they got a new executive director and that they read it. Somebody actually read it and realized, oh, this is not, you know, it's not a good law. It's not
that was what
help
I was
anybody.
Saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was what I've been carrying the proposition, the full, all seven pages of it with me everywhere I go. And when I was at Sierra College, I said, here, I'm sure the yes table didn't invite you to do this, but I'm going to invite you to actually read it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, nobody wanted to do. But,
once
you read it, you would vote no. And for our listeners who don't know who Sage is, Sage was founded way back in 1992, actually, by Norma Hobling. Who is, she's passed on, but for a couple of decades there, she and I were kind of archenemies. SAGE stands for Standing Against Global Exploitation. So if anybody was going to be for the CASE Act, you would think it would be SAGE. And, of course, they're not because it's a lousy law. Who else?
That's horrible. Let's see.
Who else
is coming out against no on Prop 35?
I heard the Polaris Project did.
Oh, did they? Okay. But they're not local to California, so they're probably one of the national organizations. So we are starting to get some press nationally now, finally.
Well, Rachel Watton is worried. Wouldn't it be worried about
Rachel
the law
Watton
coming over
is in
to them?
Today from the sex worker, or she's formerly of the Sex Worker Outreach Project of Australia. And so that was great to see her down on the steps of City Hall today. Rachel West of U.S. Pros, the Prostitutes Collective, hosted a No on 35 rally. So everybody got to get up there and give a good hard no.
And did you say Rachel Watton was in town?
Yes, Rachel.
Rachel Watton.
She's promoting her movie called Scarlet Road. So that movie is all about her work with disabled clients. It's really great.
Oh,
and,
it's beautiful.
So hopefully I can get my hands on a copy. I guess they screened it last night or the night before last. I was still in L.A.
Oh, my God, yes. Well, I actually did a podcast with Rachel Watton. She's fabulous. She's such a loving person.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay, and so let's see who else. The East Bay Alliance for a Sustainable Community has come out against Prop 35. The Free Speech Coalition has come out against Prop 35.
Good on them.
California
Partnership to End Domestic Violence and the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, which are collaborative groups, also came out against it. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, believe it or not, the San Jose City Council decided to take a no on 35.
Oh, my gosh.
You have no idea what you've done, Maxine. You have no idea. It's
one
turned into
whore
quite
stands
a
up and says no and stamps her foot on the ground. And
and everybody lined up behind you.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, they should. I mean, and this is it, is that, you know, we really do care about people who are involved in forced fraud and coercion against their will, and we really want to stop that. But, you know, it's like your other guest said, you've got to have some rights here. It's got to be a rights-based approach. And Prop 35 is not a rights-based approach.
No, it's not even a victim approach. It doesn't seem to be really focused on helping the victims. It seems like it's very punitive. It's as angry as its author. And, you know, like I've said before, I'm sure Daphne Fung has the best of intentions, but she does come across as an incredibly rageful person. And I just, you know, that's not a good energy to be trying to write laws that affect other people's lives, you know, especially when it's going to affect their lives for the rest of their lives. It's really important that you approach
that. That was the other phone call that I got today, was from one of the Southern California groups who, you know, work on direct service providing, and, you know, got a little earful on some of the supposed backstory there, of which I won't repeat because it's, you know, not really the road we want to go down right now. But,
okay,
you know, there's a lot of dissension apparently within the trafficking community, the people who call themselves the trafficking community and, you know, are working on this issue. And it just sounds like, and that could be the reason why, you know, Kamala Harris, the Attorney General, had to host a working group to, you know, for the updated report that's due out any minute on trafficking. The state trafficking report is that there were probably a bunch of groups that were fighting and carrying on or being in disagreement about the approach. And, you know, so the way to try to resolve some of those issues was to get people to the table and to get them heard. Unfortunately, they didn't bring us to the table, and nor did they bring any of the minors to the table. And that's really my main concern, Veronica, is that the minors have not really had a voice in this whole discourse, except for, I don't know if you saw the video yet, but it's of Annenberg, UC Annenberg.
No, I haven't. Tell us about it.
So I'm getting ready to post a bunch of stuff, update the website. But
and by the way, if people want to follow you on Facebook, Maxine, how can they follow you on Facebook? They might want to go over there right now, as a matter of fact.
Okay, yeah, you can look at the like. You can like the Oppose Prop 35 page. It's got all the links on there, and it's got your fabulous link from last week, too, from when you stood up at Stanford and, you know, called out the organizers for not even inviting
you know, sex workers to a thing about sex workers. Yeah, it was so typical, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And so the link is on there to the UCS Annenberg panel, where they had John Venick, the ex San Jose police officer who's opposing Prop 35. He goes up against Chris Kelly, and he goes up against another gal who's for the proponents, and she has a really horrific story, and I remember the story. She ended up in the sex industry as a 15-year-old. She's a mother of five. It sounds like one of her daughters ends up being abducted by somebody who's involved in a gang, is held hostage for a week. She's forced sexually assaulted and beaten up, and then forced to go work. And somehow she's probably arrested for prostitution. I mean, they don't say that, but I remember her case because I remember it because the guy got 35 years. So this is a recent case. It's a case where, you know, it clearly shows that the laws are in effect and that they are working. But one of the things that she talks about is that she now works for one of the organizations who are providing services to the minors. And so she gets asked the question at the very end by one of the audience members about, you know, are the minors, you know, the young women who have been working as teenage prostitutes, who, you know, are now, you know, in some sort of care facility that's, you know, not clear, how do they feel about Prop 35? Are they aware of Prop 35, and what do they think? And she comes back, and her answer says, yes, they're aware of it, but they're still really concerned that they're the ones who are ending up in handcuffs.
Yes.
So I just find that
exactly.
Statement, yeah, yeah.
Okay,
it's
I mean,
not lost on the youth
that they're being criminalized here, and wrongly so. Yeah. So it's a big problem. Yeah.
Wow.
So I was happy to hear at least, you know, if we could just get the right people to the table to talk about what's not working, and if we could get the decision makers to be courageous in stopping what's not working, which is the criminalization of prostitution across the board.
Exactly. Now, how would you suggest to take, a lot of times there's not a lot of legal standing for people who are underage, and this law is specifically supposed to be about helping them, but you're right, they haven't been asked to weigh in on this, and I think one of the things you're trying to communicate to our listeners is that there's actually runaways who are doing survival sex in the streets, whose vote, whose opinion, whose needs are really not taken into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
I think you actually know quite a bit about that topic. What is it that you would like the listeners to know about how they could actually show up for these young people in a way that's constructive and positive?
Well, I think that, we have to restore the social safety net. I know that people hate to hear that, but it seems to me, since they took the contract out on America in 1994, both the Republican and the Democratic Congress removed the safety net. And so, when they keep talking about this epidemic of trafficking, of sex trafficking, of minors in particular, the underage, hearing this woman's testimony in this this video from last week and this panel, I mean, it just lines up. The timing just lines
up. Hey, Maxine, your phone is cutting out on us a little bit, so if you can.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay.
I hope this is better, but
I don't want to lose you there. So you were saying.
I was just saying that, I just think it goes back to when both the Republican and the Democratic House in 1994 took the contract out on America and gutted the social safety net. So now that we're seeing people who don't have jobs, who can't afford housing, food to house their children, the children as a result end up in the social service system and end up going to foster homes. So now the foster parents are being paid to house and feed and care for these children, whereas the parents are not. So it just creates this whole disruption in the lives of youth. And, if we care about the children, we should care about the parents of the children and provide basic needs, people's basic needs for health care, for food, for shelter, for dignity, if we really care about those kids.
Yeah, it seems to me that if you take a kid who's doing survival sex off the street and put them through the system, that there's a really good chance you're going to try to return them back to the problematic home that they ran away from in the first place. Is that your understanding?
Well, yeah, but my understanding is the people that I have met who ended up working on the streets as a real young person were there because the society did not support, the dignity of their home. That, the homes were, the housing was always under threat and in many cases threatened and taken away. There were health issues for the parents that were never addressed, that couldn't be addressed. So you had parents who were unable to care for and feed their children. You had such immigration situations. One of my friends, one of the parents had a tenuous immigration situation. So that put the family always in great amount of stress and peril. And so all of these people ended up doing what they needed to do just to be able to eat and to provide themselves some housing, be able to afford their school books.
So right? I put my overlay on that, and I'm thinking, okay, they probably ran away from an abusive home. And really what you're telling us is that this comes back to poverty within our own borders.
Yeah. And I'm just astounded that, you know, here in the year 2012, that the corporations, the American corporations under the capitalist system are, you know, holding on to $2 trillion in cash, hard liquid cash. And, you know, the president and others have been calling on them and the Chamber of Commerce to invest in America, and they refuse. And it's like they're holding Americans hostage here on some level by doing that. And then, again, as Americans, we have to understand that that $2 trillion came from the labor of Americans. So it's even like people that don't work in the sex industry, people who are not trafficked, are still in struggle to try to gain access to the fruits of their own labor to be able to afford, you know, their lives, to be able to afford a living. Yeah. And so, you know, it just, this whole trafficking business, I mean, the whole rhetoric of it is like, well, maybe we can charge, you know, McDonald's with, you know, trafficking. for, you know, coercing, you know, people to, you know, coercing our, let's see, maybe our legislators for continuing to suppress the minimum wage in the country, you know? Maybe we should think about it on those levels and start to really address, you know, the broader problem of people not having access, you know, or the right to say yes and their right to say no on their job.
You know, it really looks like if the people get poorer and poorer and the laws get more punitive and more punitive, and we really are headed in a direction where, you know, not only do we have this disparity between the haves and the have-nots and the shrinking middle class, but then we're also looking at, you know, this burgeoning prison-industrial complex where more and more people are being thrown into the prison system.
Nedra Louise addressed that today. You know, she's a lawyer for Pier 1 here in San Francisco, a criminal defense law firm that features the likes of Tony, you know, Saras, you know, famous criminal defense attorney. And, you know, she talked extensively and called into question if the proponents don't have stock invested in some of these private prison systems.
And, really?
You know, I mean, I think it's a question that needs to be, you know, we don't have, you know, it's unfortunate that this ballot measure has just left people to grumble privately and, you know, to nobody to really ask them any hard questions here, you know, questions that are on our minds. And, of course, Chris Kelly was invited today. You know, Rachel did invite him to come to our rally, our no rally, and he didn't come. But, you know, there's some hard questions here that need to be asked.
I didn't expect Chris Kelly to show up.
No, but we did our due diligence. We made the ask.
Yes, exactly. He was invited, unlike the sex worker rights activists who weren't invited to anything because Kelly and Daphne Fung have been up to it. So what's next? We've only got another week here before the election. You know, what's the push? Where are you headed next?
I'm just, you know, it's going to be another busy week of answering phone calls from people. Just a lot of people calling on the phone, lots and lots of voters calling.
Are they
I got a Spanish, couple of Spanish speakers that called over the weekend. And so, fortunately, you know, we have somebody who speaks Spanish who was able to address that. But it was very interesting. One of the callers was a woman, and she didn't speak very good English, and I did not speak very good Spanish, but, you know, she came across the border was her story. She worked in Mexico on the streets, and you could tell that that was an admission she doesn't make very often. but that she read Prop 35. She read the Spanish version, and she was calling my, you know, she's calling the number because she had some concerns about it, because she has lived what really happened. And so when you have people like that calling, who've, you know, lived through some of the situations that we're all concerned about, there's a lot of voices here that need to get to the table. We need to be able to hear their stories.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, of course, not what's going to happen if Proposition 35 passes, and it just forces things underground and silences disparate voices, which are so important to bring to the table.
I mean, we're all going to have to spend a bunch of time undoing it. That's what's going to happen.
If it just ends up passing, which, you know, with as many people who are rescinding their endorsements and coming out against it, I'm certainly hoping that the voters have been able to get clear on it. I know if the voters know what the law actually does, that they definitely would vote against it. And that's one of the things that's most disturbing about Proposition 35 is that it's it purports to be one thing and it's really something else. We're out of time here, Maxine. Boy, that flew by. So tell the listeners how they can get involved and help you or find out more if they're still a little bit confused about their vote.
Mm-hmm. Well, they can always look at their voter information guide for the contact information and the website information. They can certainly Google Prop 35, and you could see all of the You can see it. You can see all of the no that's starting to pop out on it and all the objections. And, of course, you can always call 415-265-3302, my number, and you can, you know, talk about it. They can contact you and email you because you're a great person to speak to about it. And the website is noon35.info.
Noon35, please. And whatever you do, get out there and vote. Very important. It's an important election. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Maxine Dugan, the voice of opposition to Proposition 35 here in the state of California, and one very, very busy, ambitious woman. Thanks for all that you do, Maxine. And thanks for tuning in to the Shame Free Zone. I will be back next Monday. I'm going to be interviewing Chris Kaufman, and we're going to be talking about some of the more sensual aspects.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you.